Hello and welcome to Crosstalk. I'm Peter Laveau. Just how influential is the Israeli lobby in the U.S.? To what degree does it impact American foreign policy? What about the rift that now divides U.S. President Barack Obama and Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu? And who has the right to define red lines when it comes to Iran? To crosstalk Israel's influence on Washington, I'm joined by Ruthie Bloom in New York. She's a journalist and author of the recent book, To Hell in a Handbasket, Carter, Obama, and the Arab Spring. In Washington, we have Grant Smith. He is director of the Institute for Research, Middle Eastern Policy, and author of Spy Trade, How Israel's Lobby Undermines America's Economy. And in San Jose, we cross to Stephen Zunis. He is a professor of politics and international studies at the University of San Francisco. All right, folks, crosstalk rules in effect. That means you can jump in any time you want. Ruthie, I'd like to go to you first. A lot of people say that Mr. Netanyahu has stepped over the line in meddling in American politics. How do you respond to that?
I think he hasn't stepped over any lines in meddling in American politics. I think that what he's doing is trying to protect Israel. And what he's been saying to President Obama is that the time is running out for stopping Iran's nuclear program. And so what he's saying is, listen, if you guys don't do it, I have to do it.
Okay. Grant, would you like to reply to that?
Yeah, that's not it. Benjamin Netanyahu is the leader of a nuclear-tipped country in the most volatile region on the planet. We know from an FBI report that was released in June that he's even had his own hands into nuclear technology smuggling to beef up that arsenal. What he's saying is, Obama, you don't have time to keep on with these economic sanctions. You've got to attack Iran with your conventional weapons, or else Israel's going to use its undeclared nuclear arsenal to incinerate its enemies. It's a nuclear blackmail, basically.
Okay, Stephen, jump in from San Jose.
Well, it's not unusual and not improper necessarily for foreign leaders to raise concerns about the policies of other governments, including allies. But there's a widespread consensus, even among some of Israel's strongest supporters in Congress and in the media and elsewhere, that Netanyahu does seem to be bringing in a degree of partisanship in support of Romney and in opposition to Obama in this election year by pushing a number of issues involving Iran and other concerns.
Okay. Ruthie, what about that? Because
that
really does look...
I'm going to jump in
here
now.
Go ahead. Please do, Ruthie.
I'm going to jump in here now to say that if what you think if you think that Netanyahu is lobbying for Romney, that's pretty funny considering that the Jewish vote in America is going predominantly to Obama. And Netanyahu is an ally of the United States, but Obama doesn't treat him like one. I don't think this is nuclear blackmail. This is no joke. Ahmadinejad has made it clear that he wants to wipe Israel off the map and then take care of the great
Satan. No, that's a mistranslation.
Go ahead,
Grant. Yeah, that's not true at all. Ahmadinejad has said that he opposes this regime that's not allowing any sort of Palestinian autonomy in the region. I do agree with Ruthie, however, that this is not just partisan politics. Israel is used to reaching into its lobbying organizations in the United States and having a direct hand in moving resources and animating and agitating. I mean, this has been going on since Ben-Gurion first visited the United States, couldn't get weapons, and so he put together an arms smuggling network to get what he wanted and ship it to Palestine via rich Zionist donors. So I agree that Netanyahu is definitely trying to have an impact on a broader section of American voters, basically by using a baseless argument that Israel is facing an existential threat, which it's not. Israel is the nuclear hegemon in the region.
Okay, Stephen, jump in. Go ahead.
I find ironic that this line that Obama's not treating Israel as an ally. Israel currently receives more than a quarter of all U.S. foreign aid, even though it's only 1/1,000th of the world's population, and it's a relatively affluent country. Obama has brought U.S. aid to Israel to its highest level in history, despite cutbacks in domestic programs at home. He has used his veto power and the UN Security Council to veto a non-binding resolution simply reiterating the long-standing consensus in international law based on the Fourth Geneva Convention, four previous UN Security Council resolutions, and a landmark World Court decision that the colonization, the settlements in the West Bank, are illegal. I could go down the list, but to say somehow that Obama is not adequately supporting Israel, or that he's not treating Israel as an ally, is a gross distortion of Obama's record. You can agree or disagree with specifics, but he has recommitted himself both in word and deed to his steadfast support to Israel, even under the current right-wing government with which he shares some differences.
Okay, Ruthie, would you like to reply to any of that? I want to be fair. Ruthie, go ahead.
Yes, I would like to reply to that. First of all, since Obama took office, the first thing he did was to make it clear to the radical Islamist world that he was going to do outreach with them, including Iran. When the Iranian people took to the streets in 2009 after Ahmadinejad stole the election, Obama abandoned them in favor of the mullahs. What he said was, well, you know, I'm not going to interfere in your process, and I'm going to negotiate with anyone who wins that election. A few months later, a year later, he did the exact opposite with all of the rest of the Arab world. When they took to the streets, he abandoned American and Israeli allies in favor of radical Islamists.
We have to point out, gentlemen, please.
We're pro-Islamist. I know them. They are not radical Islamists. These people want a democracy. They want freedom. They want to be able to elect their own leaders.
President Morsi of Egypt is a Muslim brotherhood.
Stephen, go ahead.
Morsi won the election, but people have a right to elect their own leaders. The difference between you and me and figs, I believe in freedom and democracy. I believe that people should be able to elect their own leaders. There are not enough governments like that. That's why I supported the revolution, the aborted Green Revolution in Iran. That's why I supported the movements in Tunisia and in Egypt and Yemen and in Syria and elsewhere. That these dictators, I don't care if they're pro-U.S. or anti-U.S. They need to be pushed aside and allow the people to choose. Obama did not support the mullahs.
But the people didn't choose Ahmadinejad in that last election.
U.S. intervention in Iran, if the United States did play a more active role, it would play against them. It would hurt the movement, which he very much supported.
Ruthie's prescription is basically a neoconservative swamp gas.
Okay, Grant, jump in.
The U.S. needs to prop up a dictator if it in any way will be better for Israel. And so by Ruthie's prescription, the United States should have found another Shah for Iran. The United States should have created a clone of Hosni Mubarak. The United States should have basically supported any dictatorship that lost the support of its people if it were better for Israel. And unfortunately, you know, you see the same sort of anti-democratic fervor and desire to support Israel even in the United States. I mean, you should play that clip of where Democratic Party delegates at their national convention are saying, we don't recognize Israel's illegal annexation of East Jerusalem. We don't want that in our Democratic Party plank. And yet they were steamrolled by people within the Democratic Party who simply passed that resolution anyway. And so this is neoconservative swamp gas. It's the same type of mentality that's gotten us into Iraq, and it's really destroyed the United States' reputation in the Middle East.
Fair time. Ruthie, please jump in.
They were not steamrolled by other members of the Democratic Party. That fiasco
Absolutely
at the Democratic Convention was
Nobody
the work.
Nobody at that convention
I
wanted
you,
to recognize
fiasco,
the illegal annexation.
It was Obama's
That's
directive.
The way the Israel lobby works
Come
in
on,
the U.S.
Gentlemen, Ruthie, Obama, go ahead, please. Let her speak. Ruthie.
Obama orchestrated that fiasco. They were not steamrolled by other members. Obama gave the directive not to let that pass because he was afraid that might lose him a general election. That's first of all. Second
well,
of all,
should he be
I
afraid
find it
of
really
that?
Amazing. Why should he be afraid of that? Because a
why
majority
should he want
of Congress
to put that
and a lot of the American people among them.
Destabilizing piece into the Democratic Party platform, which, you know, basically destroys any U.S. credibility for negotiating any sort of settlement.
All right.
It's horrible. It's
let me jump in here. Brings up a very interesting point. What is the power of the lobby, the Israeli lobby, on the parties? Go ahead.
I think the power of the lobby is greatly exaggerated, frankly. The United States supports dictatorships in the Arab world, the same reasons it supported dictatorships in Africa and Asia, Latin America, elsewhere throughout history, because they believe that that these dictatorships may be more supportive of U.S. strategic and economic goals than democracies. It's not to put the blame on Israel is grossly exaggerated. Similarly,
I put the blame on Israel's lobby. You know, Israel's lobby back in the 60s wanted to have Israel armed with nuclear weapons, and they steamrolled the sovereign Kennedy administration with people like Abraham Feinberg financing nuclear weapons, Zalman Shapiro transferring material. I mean, this is almost
States supports dictatorships elsewhere in the world. Are you saying that's all Israel lobby too? I mean, by God,
I'm talking about Israel's lobby subverting democratic processes in the United States. For example, Israeli Trade Minister Dan Halpern stole classified documents.
Grant, I'm going to have to jump in here. We're going to go to a short break, folks, a short break. And after that short break, we'll continue our discussion on the Israeli lobby in the U.S. Stay. Welcome back to Crosstalk. I'm Peter Lavelle. To remind you, we're talking about Israel's role in America's presidential politics. Okay, Stephen, I'd like to go back to you in San Jose. What is the overlap of American foreign policy interests with Israel's foreign policy interests?
Well, the perceived thing is perceived overlap is that the United States and Israel both status quo powers, challenging both left-wing and Islamist movements in that part of the world. The military-industrial complexes of the two countries are closely intertwined. You know, Israel has and the United States have supported certain governments and insurgencies and others. The Mossad and CIA have cooperated in intelligence gathering and in covert operations. I could go down the list, I think that while certainly the pro-Israel lobby plays an important role, I think the main factor is the perceived confluence of interest. Now, I think in the long term, it actually hurts.
This is where I wanted to go. This is exactly where I wanted to go.
Because it encourages a backlash by extremists.
Okay,
But the perception is that Israel is an ally.
Ruthie, what do you think about that?
And also...
I think it's appalling that we should call the alliance between the United States and Israel perceived. None of you has mentioned the shared democracy, shared values of freedom.
What about the Palestinians?
You know, those are the
what
things
the
that both American society
what
and Israeli society have been built on.
What about their democratic rights?
I'll tell you about the Palestinians. The Palestinians have made it clear again and again and have announced it that they consider all of Israel to be settlements. The Palestinians
Israel within its 67 borders.
Okay, Grant, jump in.
And Abbas is clearly the Israel lobby that really dominates Washington is AIPAC, and it has a direct lineage back to the Israeli Ministry of Foreign Affairs where its founder worked. And so this lobby has been competing with law enforcement agencies and the Foreign Agents Registration Act to keep from being actually considered part of the Israeli government. All of these trade agreements and military agreements were not really motivated by U.S. needs. They were lobbying initiatives for memorandums of understanding and all sorts of military aid. The Iran-Contra scandal, in fact, was born out of the Kenya
ridiculous.
Group, where a bunch of Israeli arms dealers are trying to figure out how they could get back into Iran and run the Mossad torture camps and sell more arms back into Iran. So none of these were really U.S. interests.
That is
the Israel
ridiculous.
Lobby at this point in time is extremely dangerous, and believe me, the CIA and FBI worry more about counterintelligence against Israeli Mossad than they do cooperating with it. And whether that's the recent Israel Aircraft Industries work with Stuart Nozette or the spy scandals.
Okay, Grant, I think you made your point. You made your point.
Not
okay,
a counter-espionage threat.
Okay, Stephen, go ahead.
90% of all so-called U.S. military aid to Israel goes back to American arms manufacturers. It's a way of subsidizing the military-industrial complex. It doesn't help Israelis. In fact, for every dollar U.S. military aid,
that's not precisely true. There's a lot of integration agreements. They want to integrate systems in the F-22 fighter, and so they get lots of spin-offs, and they manage to get lots of technology for their own industries that compete with the U.S. industry.
Well, certainly,
the bottom line is the U.S. shouldn't be sending any weapons to Israel.
All right, gentlemen, you're talking over each other.
And they don't even pay for them.
Okay, Ruthie, I'd like to go to you. Netanyahu says that Iran's only months away from getting the bomb, okay? He said the same thing in 1992.
You know what? It's not only Netanyahu that said the same thing in 1992.
Okay, but he said it, Ruthie, and this is what we're talking about. He's telling Americans this, okay? Scaring Americans. So why should we believe him now?
Excuse me, John Bolton is an American, and he's been telling that to Israel for years as well.
John Bolton? He's no authority.
Bolton's a pathological liar.
Why are you quoting John Bolton?
He had a nuclear program. That was a lie,
exactly.
too.
Exactly.
Come on, you catch up.
Okay, if I wanted to get a gazillion hits, I guess I'd make a program on John Bolton. Go ahead, Ruthie, go ahead. Go ahead.
Okay, I would like to jump into these cockamamie conspiracy
theories. What did Judith Miller say about
Israel.
This? Did Judith Miller also say that there are nuclear weapons in Iran?
Okay, gentlemen, let Ruthie speak,
Judith
please. Okay,
let's
be fair time. Fair time. Ruthie, go ahead.
Netanyahu is doing what Netanyahu has to do. He is assessing the world situation based on, and not only on analysis, but on what the Muslim world says, publishes, and does. Have you not noticed there have been massive acts of terrorism committed against the United States, even more so than against Israel? You're talking
you
as though
like
there's
the
some
Levant
kind
affair
of
when Israeli agents try
Israeli
to
conspiracy. Egypt?
Are you talking about that? That's not a conspiracy
Excuse
theory.
Me?
That happened. I said when Israeli agents attacked American Egypt, that was terrorism. When Yitzhak Shamir and Menachem Begin were setting off milk can bombs to drive the British out, that was terrorism. What's this fascination with terrorism? Israel,
first
according
of all,
to historian Paul Johnson,
first
was
of all,
founded on terrorism.
It's interesting that
acts.
You're going to go back to the 1940s. It's interesting that you're going back to the 1940s when Menachem Begin committed acts of terrorism, quote unquote. He first warned
right.
all civilians and innocent
Prime
people
Minister.
To get out of anywhere he was. He was trying, that's true, he was trying to drive out the British. And it is true he was using violent means, but he was not using them as a way of murdering people. And,
well, what Israel
we're
needs to learn is not to look at the terrorism, but look at the acts that create the terrorism. The occupation, the humiliation of Palestinians, and Israel, and terrorist expert
Let me ask you
Benjamin
a question.
Netanyahu doesn't know anything about these real factors behind terrorism.
Wow.
Well, I totally disagree with you. I think he knows very much about terrorism. But the issue is, you keep calling
me
an
occupation. Sorry, I have to jump in again. Stephen in San Jose, please go ahead.
The fact is that occupation and repression can never justify terrorism, and terrorism can never justify occupation and repression. I don't like the fact that Iran has supported extremist groups that have killed civilians. I don't like the fact the United States has sent aid to Israel that's used those against civilians. You know, 800 civilians slaughtered in the siege in Gaza, and nearly that many 2 years earlier on Lebanon. I oppose terrorism by any sides, and none, but whether it be an irregular armed group or state-sponsored or U.S. ally. that killing civilians is wrong across the board, and none can justify the other. And I think what we really need to do is have a consistent view on human rights. There's already too many arms in the Middle East. The United States should stop supporting dictatorships. We should stop Arab dictatorships. We should stop supporting the Israeli occupation. We need to have a consistent pro-human rights goal. And I really think that the problem is not the Israel lobby, because again, the United States has supported dictatorships elsewhere.
Lobby.
It's not the double standard on Iran.
The Israel lobby really keeps the United States from doing the right
thing. Standard with India and Pakistan's nuclear program
now.
It's a much more systemic problem.
The United States' biggest problem with Israel is its clandestine nuclear weapons program, and it was the Israel lobby that made our horrible policy of strategic ambiguity possible. You know, the Israel lobby, when Nixon and Kissinger were trying to shut down that nuclear program by denying jet fighters, the Israel lobby was going
to
work.
Well, they weren't trying to shut it
Israel
down. They're
to
quietly
put in
supporting
stories
it.
That, into the news.
All right, gentlemen, I'm going to jump in here.
They were withholding weapons.
I'm going to jump in here. I want to go back to Ruthie. Ruthie, do you think that Netanyahu alienates American Jews?
Absolutely not. I don't think Netanyahu alienates American Jews. I would like to say, however, that this so-called Israel lobby that's so pernicious is exactly the group that put Obama in the White House. So you should be thrilled with the Israel lobby. The Jews vote
predominantly
Democrat.
No, I'm not thrilled. You've got 2,000 people financing
AIPAC,
and they're taking marching orders from Tel Aviv and Jerusalem.
AIPAC also
I want to get them registered as foreign agents so that we can have a better policy for the Middle East. AIPAC does horrible work in terms of transferring unwarranted amounts of aid and weapons to Israel, and it's completely anti-democratic. Again, when they can't win a bill, such as a trade bill, they steal information from their opponents and use it against them. It's one of the most anti-democratic and dangerous forces in America, and it needs
to be abolished. It's actually the other way around. If anybody
it's not the other way around.
In Washington, it's AIPAC. If anybody has had false accusations...
AIPAC is a horrendously dangerous organization. It's been investigated by the FBI. Back when Morris Amite was working there, he stole missile secrets to thwart a Jordanian missile deal that almost drove him into the arms of the Soviets. I mean, this organization has been thwarting advice and consent governance ever since its founder left the Israeli Ministry of Foreign Affairs in 1951.
Okay, Stephen,
I don't know how you can say it's not dangerous.
I want to go back to you. Does Netanyahu risk a real rift with the United States over Iran?
Yeah, he has alienating a lot of some of Israel's strongest supporters, as I mentioned earlier. American Jews, according to public opinion polls, are much closer to Obama's position than they are to Netanyahu's position, not just vis-a-vis Iran,
True.
But vis-a-vis the Palestinians
True.
As well. AIPAC is not representative of the Jewish community. It's not even representative of American Zionists. It's on the right wing of American Jews. In fact, the more Netanyahu has criticized Obama, the higher Obama's ratings have been in terms of American Jews. Over 70% of American Jews who plan to vote for Obama. And so, I mean, I think it just shows how isolated AIPAC is, in not just in terms of U.S. politics overall, but even among the American and Jewish community, including those who are broadly supportive of Israel.
All right.
That's
folks,
true.
But American Jews
fascinating discussion.
Members.
We could go on for hours. I want to thank my guests today in New York, Washington, and in San Jose. And thanks to our viewers for watching us here at RT. See you next time. And remember, Crosstalk Rules. We'll be right back.